Speaking of things you put in your mouth, try this on for size. You may use mouthwash, you may not, but did you know that there's poison in that stuff? I kid you not. And here's one for a guy like me who chews a lot of gum. I'm on deadline a lot, so give me a break. NASCAR racing tires are made of the same type of rubber used in chewing gum. Who knew? You get the idea. First today, a conversation with the author of This Is What You Just Put in Your Mouth, From Eggnog to Beef Jerky, The Surprising Secrets of What's Inside Everyday Products. The author is Patrick DeGesto. He's an editor at Make and was the author of Wired's popular column, What's Inside. Patrick, welcome. Nice to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So what's this idea with mouthwash? I mean, poison? Really?
Well, the thing is, mouthwash was invented about roughly around 100 years ago, and it was almost pure alcohol to kill the germs in your mouth, the germs that cause bad breath, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all well and good, but the problem is there's an awful lot of people out there who will drink alcohol in any formulation they can get it.
Because they're alcoholics, right? Yeah.
They drink alcohol a lot, and they can't help themselves. Yes. Also, any alcohol sold for drinking must have all sorts of federal and possibly even state tax stamps. When you break the label on a bottle of liquor, that's a federal tax stamp you're breaking.
Hmm.
Mouthwash companies didn't want to have to deal with any of that, so they made an arrangement with then the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and they said, you know, we'll just make our alcohol preparation completely undrinkable. You can swish it around your mouth, but if you drink it, you will get sick to your stomach. And that's what they did. That's the process of denaturing alcohol. Whenever you hear of denatured alcohol, it is deliberately poisoned, not to kill you, but to make you unbelievably sick if you actually drink the stuff.
And speaking of that, you drank some Listerine purely for journalistic purposes, if I understand correctly, Patrick. How did that go for you?
You got to go gonzo with this. Yes, you have to actually, if it's poisonous. Also, remember, there's an awful lot of people, Stephen King, the author, was among them,
mm-hmm.
who was such an alcoholic that even the poison didn't bother him, and he used to drink the family scope. So I decided I would try it, and true to form, it made me unbelievably sick. Mm. I mean, the worst type of self-inflicted sickness I have ever had, just like wanting to die, wanting to make sure I never drank Listerine ever again in my life.
But the bottom line is the federal government sanctions this idea of putting alcohol inside of mouthwash.
Oh, absolutely. There's no problem with it. As long as you cannot drink it to get drunk, they're perfectly fine with alcohol in mouthwash.
Wow. The other one that grabbed my attention was gum, because, as I mentioned, I chew a lot of it. I don't drink coffee, don't drink much of anything, but what's this thing about gum using the same type of rubber that's used to make NASCAR racing tires?
That's just it. I'm in the same position. I have lots of deadlines, and I mm-hmm. just chew gum all the
yep.
time.
Yep.
And I had to look at what's inside this thing. Well, gum originally was made from the rubbery sap of the chicory tree from South America, which is where we get the name chiclet.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Right. But now think about this. Rubbery sap from a South American tree that is soft and chewy and pliable, that's chicory. Then, you know, two trees over, you've got rubbery sap that is soft and chewy and pliable, and that's latex, rubber. They are very, very, very similar chemically, you know, in terms of their properties. They're very, very similar. It didn't take long for gum manufacturers to realize, hey, we're tapping a lot of rubber. We're not tapping a lot of chicory. Let's just see if we could switch to actual rubber. And a lot of chewing gum was made out of untreated rubber. As time went on and we started to develop synthetics for, you know, synthetic rubber and things mm-hmm. like that, they realized, hey, let's see if we could chew that. And apparently the American public had no problem chewing synthetic rubber, the same exact kind of synthetic rubber that goes into the very soft qualifying tires for NASCAR racers.
And can this stuff hurt you?
Generally, no. I mean, people do tend to eat and swallow gum. I confess I've done it a time or two. And the worst thing that's really going to happen to you, I mean, you know, unless you like, you know, get a giant bolus of it and just eat it like an apple. Generally, you know, chewing and swallowing one or two pieces of gum, the worst thing that's going to happen is if it's sugar-free gum, the sugar alcohols in the gum don't digest very well in your lower intestine, and your body does its best to get rid of them explosively.
Yes. Well, how did you get started looking into what's inside these everyday products that you talk about in your book? This is what you just put in your mouth?
Mm-hmm. It started at a Super Bowl about 10 years ago, a little more. A friend of mine, who shall remain a nameless drunk, looked at a can of Easy Cheese, you know, the spray-on aerosol cheese, and started philosophizing, as drunks do, you know, what is exactly in this can of stuff? What is this stuff? And it got me thinking. I was doing a lot of, infographic work for Wired magazine at the time, and I realized that looking at what's inside a can of aerosol cheese would make a great infographic. And they liked it, and before I knew it, it was a monthly column just looking at various things, calling it out infographic style, and seeing what the products of our everyday life are made of.
How difficult was it for you, Patrick, to run down what's in some of these products? I mean, how forthcoming were the manufacturers about what the ingredients in terms of what they were putting into these things?
Right. Well, thank goodness that edible stuff must contain a written label of ingredients on the actual packaging. So that's always a great start. That's always a great help. The next step comes when, you know, I actually try and talk to the corporation that is making this thing. I found that in general, smaller corporations, mom and pop things, things that are still run by like the family that originated it. Those companies are very, very forthcoming, very easy to talk to. They love to talk about the things that they make. They're very proud of it. Larger corporations, on the other hand, I don't think they've lost the personal touch. They don't feel personally involved with these products. All they're concerned about, they are absolutely terrified that I would be someone like, you know, there are other writers out there who like to scare people about what's inside various foods. They were absolutely afraid that I would be that kind of person. And, you know, I would have to try and explain to them, no, it's not about fear. It's about, you know, it's about intelligent sarcasm. And that didn't seem to go over too well. They didn't like that much better than fear. So in general, the large companies are not forthcoming. Not because they're afraid of their own ingredients, they're afraid of my attitude.
We're visiting with Patrick DiGiusto. He's the author of the book, This Is What You Just Put in Your Mouth, From Eggnog to Beef Jerky, The Surprising Secrets of What's Inside Everyday Products. If you have a question or a product you want to run by Patrick, this would be a great time to call 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. So your goal with this book, Patrick, was what exactly? What were you trying to achieve here?
Never to cause panic, to make people afraid of eating things. It was purely just a geek's enjoyment of learning about what is inside these products. What exactly am I eating? What does it do? How does this ingredient relate to that ingredient so that they make something that neither ingredient can do on their own? It's how these products are actually put together. I just found that fascinating. And luckily, I was able to find an audience that also found it fascinating.
And the takeaway from this is what? I mean, are we endangering ourselves to the edge of our lives here, Patrick? Or what do you walk away with?
I've never looked at it that way. I mean, really, think about it. Is there any CEO, even the most venial corporate CEO, the worst person you can imagine, is not going to deliberately poison their customers? If they're going to do it, it's going to be accidental, or more likely they just don't, they're not paying too much attention. So it's not, my whole goal was not to make people panic, but just to realize, that's all. Just realize what you're eating. The decision is up to you. If you think that these ingredients aren't so bad, go right ahead, continue. If you suddenly realize that, hey, I'm eating this stuff and I don't want to, then don't.
Well, part of my issue sometimes when you look at those labels is I don't understand what half the things on the label typically is, which I can hear people out in radio land saying right now, well, then, Steve, don't eat it if you don't know what it is. But you don't know what a lot of that stuff is.
True. But here's the thing. You could take the cleanest, most organic apple off of a tree and bring it into a laboratory and ask the scientists to tell you what each chemical in this apple is. You're going to get a list, as long as your arm, of chemical names that you have no idea what they are. All they're just doing is describing the natural ingredients that are inside this apple.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, there are some chemical names that come straight out of a petroleum plant, and you're eating them. But there are also lots of chemical names that are simply the chemical names of something totally natural. And I hope in the book, I do my best to separate the two to point out that, glucose is sugar. And if you don't want to eat sugar, don't eat that. And if you do, go right ahead.
Now, this interested me. You say that the most disturbing thing you found in your research, Patrick, has to do with eggnog and this idea that it violates federal law. How does eggnog violate federal law?
Well, it started out very simply. In 1981, the FDA put out a change to their definition of eggnog, which said that any product sold as eggnog in the United States cannot contain excess artificial or natural yellow food coloring. Because the idea is that would make people believe that there are more eggs in the product than there really are, and that would be fraud, and that would be wrong, and you can't do it. And that makes perfect sense. Now, go to the supermarket, go and look at the eggnog on the shelves. You'll find practically every single one of them contains yellow food coloring. And so I was like, well, here's the law that says you can't do it, and here are the products that actually do it. What's the loophole? And I searched for literally weeks. We contacted law professors. We contacted lawyers. We contacted food chemists. We contacted the National Archives trying to find the actual law for this. And it turns out that what happened was in 1981, the FDA put forth this regulation. The dairy manufacturers were in an uproar about it. They said, we need yellow food coloring. So the FDA said, all right, here's what we'll do. We will keep the law on the books, but we will not enforce it until such time as we can hold a hearing. And I asked the folks at the National Archives, when was this hearing held? And they have no record that this hearing was ever held. This is 33 years later, and they still have not held the hearing on eggnog.
Huh.
And let's be realistic. Anyone who was working at the FDA back in 1981, they're either retired or dead. No one even knows about this hearing. Face it, the hearing is never going to be held. Now, again, it's not the end of the world, but it does make you think. We have this law on the books that the FDA is deliberately not enforcing.
Right.
Now, for eggnog, it's a minor thing, but what are the other laws that they're doing this for?
Exactly.
And, I found this by accident. What's the next one that people are going to find by accident?
You say the most, let me go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888 is our number. Leslie from Leawood. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Okay, it was brought to my attention by a YouTube ad that there are metal fragments in certain cereals.
Metal fragments,
They took a cup of Wheaties or an amount of Wheaties, crushed it, and went to the magnet and pulled out metal fragments. And my question is this like iron fortification? Is this how they, fortify it with iron, or is this something dangerous? And I can take my question off the air.
That is precisely what it is. Now, when you think of
metal fragments, that's the iron they put in the cereal to fortify it with iron.
That is exactly it. Now it metal fragments. Fragments might be a little too fear-mongery. It looks like very, very, very fine powder or dust.
Hmm.
And the thing is, if you're going to take an iron, vitamin pill or fortified with iron, well, yeah, it's going to be iron. It's going to be little pieces of metal. It's a very, very, very fine powder. And yes, when you crush the cereal, I've actually done this. It's loads of fun. you crush the cereal and you get a magnet. Crush the cereal and get a magnet, and it picks up all the very fine black powder. And yes, indeed, that is the iron fortification in your cereal.
Huh. And then you know something that maybe you wish you hadn't known.
Well, if you are eating Wheaties because it's fortified with iron, you have to think to yourself, how does the iron get in there?
Yeah.
What is it going to be? It's going to be iron.
Yeah. Let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Steve from Blue Springs. Steve, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Just in case you might have got sidetracked and not talk about it, I love beef jerky. What's in beef jerky?
Beef jerky, Patrick.
Beef jerky is pretty much beef, and the real fun is trying to find out the quality of the beef. I doubt very much it's Kobe beef, but it's beef and salt and usually some form of lactic acid and some form of bacteria. Because think about this. Yogurt is milk that has been, deliberately had bacteria added to it so it won't spoil any further. Well, they do the same thing with Slim Jim meat sticks. To keep the meat from spoiling any further, they impregnate it with the good bacteria, the yogurt type of bacteria,
mm-hmm.
so that it will create that little tart, acidy bite flavor to it and keep the meat from spoiling with the bad bacteria. Plus, there's something called sodium nitrates and sodium nitrites that are also added to meat to keep that pink color in them. Usually dead meat, which is basically what meat is, dead meat is gray, and you don't want to eat gray meat just because it looks ugly. So they will add these sodium chemicals to it to bring out the pinkness.
Well, Steve, I hope that helped. We have two questions here from Perry. He wants to know, does it really take 7 years for your body to process swallowed gum like my mother taught me? And what is in a Twinkie that will make it survive a nuclear holocaust?
The chewing gum thing, really. I mean, again, we're talking about if you swallow one or two sticks at a time, it will pass out of you the same way that just about everything else passes out
mm-hmm.
of you. The Twinkie. Now, I specifically did not look at Twinkies in my columns
mm-hmm.
because there's that wonderful book, Twinkie Deconstructed, that does a much better job.
There's a book on that?
Twinkies. A whole book that takes apart one Twinkie. It's wonderful. And the thing is, just keep this one thing in mind. The white stuff inside a Twinkie is called cream filling.
Mm-hmm.
But look at how it's spelled. C-R-E-M-E.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they don't want you, they're not allowed to let you think it has anything to do with actual milk or cream.
Mm-hmm.
It is white vanilla sugar whipped together, and a lot of preservatives. And that's essentially it. So it's creamy, but it's spelled in a completely atrocious way because they cannot make a connection between that and real cream.
Oh, that's something. Tell us about Red Bull, the popular soft drink, because people want to know about this. And I've always wondered about it. What's in it?
Red Bull. Well, the reason for the name Bull is because it contains an amino acid called taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E. And if you think, taurine, Taurus the bull,
mm-hmm.
bull, yes. It comes from bull bile. And what it does, it is a pretty interesting amino acid. It has been shown to have a calming effect on the human nervous system. It can relax an irregular heartbeat, and that's really nice. It does have, general, very, very delicate beneficial effects on the human nervous system. So where are the wings that you get from Red Bull? Remember that ad? You know, you get wings from Red Bull?
Right.
It turns out this has almost twice as much caffeine as a can of soda. And it's the caffeine that gives you the confidence and energy and all the stuff you associate with having wings. If anything, the taurine is in there to keep your heart beating regular after you've ingested all that caffeine.
Huh. Octavio tweeted this. What about what's in a fruitcake?
Oh, an actual fruitcake? I never actually did a fruitcake. We're going to save that for the next book.
All right.
Thank you.
The sequel. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Paul from Overland Park. Paul, you're on Up to Date. Our guest today is Patrick DeGesto. He's author of This Is What You Just Put in Your Mouth. Go ahead, Paul.
All right. Thanks for taking my call. I don't know if you're familiar with a couple of the German alcohol drinks that have gold flakes in them. My understanding was originally the idea was that the gold flakes would take out poisonous substances as they went through your body. Any research on that?
No, I'd actually never heard of that. I have come across, you know, the gold flake drinks in Japan in the 1980s when they were, you know, very, very rich and go-go. They would sprinkle gold dust into their coffee. I do know that the gold is pretty inert. It does go through your system and you just wind up, you know, literally flushing it away, which has got to be like the biggest waste of gold I can imagine. But I'd never actually come across the gold absorbing poisons from your system. That's interesting.
Well,
I'll have to look into that.
That was one of the reasons for drinking the alcohol, I guess.
Yeah, yes.
Hey, thanks for the call, Paul. You bet.
Yeah.
Hey, just a final thing. What about that stuff that surrounds the cherry in one of those chocolate cherry chocolate things, you know, that you eat out of a box of chocolates? I remember as a boy tasting one of those for the first time and thinking I was about to die and go to heaven. I mean, that was the greatest taste in the whole world. What is that stuff?
It's fantastic, isn't it?
It's fantastic, yeah.
It's saliva. It's genetically engineered saliva. Essentially, what happens is like, there's two ways to make a cherry cordial. You can make a little cup of chocolate and put the cherry and the liquid in and then put a lid on it. Well,
mm-hmm.
That's the easy way out. The other way is to take a cherry, encase it in pure sugar, spray that sugar with a saliva enzyme that starts to break down the sugar,
yeah,
and then run that whole thing through a Willy Wonka chocolate waterfall, so that it completely gets coated in chocolate. While that is happening, the saliva enzyme is going to work on the sugar and the cherry inside the chocolate, and it's slowly dissolving and blending them together so that over the course of a couple of days as it goes from the factory onto the truck and then into the store, by the time it gets to the store, that saliva enzyme has completely blended the sugar and the cherry together to make that incredible taste. I do one last thing. It is not a human saliva enzyme. No one has come and spit into your chocolate. They get
good
the enzyme
know.
From
Patrick,
it comes from yeast, so it's yeast.
Patrick DeGesto is the author of This Is What You Just Put in Your Mouth. Patrick, it was a hoot to have you. Thanks for taking some time with us today. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks for talking with me.